great, that's got it. It was an anxious moment when you switch on the PowerPoint, isn't it? So, as you can see from the slide, I am Chief Inspector Annika Strandhed from the Oslo... right, that should be the Oslo Boat Patrol, not the Oslo Bat Patrol. Sorry if that's disappointing for anyone. Zoology students might want to leave now. So welcome to your criminology lecture, which I'm delighted to be giving you today. Thanks for the invite. Although, if we get stuck, I could probably do a tight 5 minutes on bats as well. I had one in my apartment a few years ago, actually. Did a bit of research about them while I basically cowered in the corner of my room waiting for it to fly out the window. A pipistrelle, if you were interested. They get stressed in the summer because it doesn't really get dark. Thinking about it, the zoology guys might want to stick around after all. Yep, I'll crack on. I can see your tutor getting twitchy. So, as I said, I head up the boat patrol unit, but deaths in water generally fall under my jurisdiction. And detectives from my unit will also assist in other departments on an ad hoc basis, depending on their caseload. Criminology, as you'll know, comes from the Latin crimen, meaning accusation, and logos, meaning reason, and was a term coined by the famous Italian law professor Raffaele Garofalo in the late 19th century. There's a picture of him there, nicely groomed moustache. It was Garofalo who challenged the prevalent idea at the time, which was that crime was defined as something that was simply against the law. He didn't think that was a deep enough definition, and so he suggested that crime was something to be understood on a more sociological level. And so he formulated the concept of natural crime, which is an act, a behavior, a thing that is considered a crime in society independent of the circumstances of the age or the particular views of the lawmaker. In other words, natural crime is conduct which offends basic moral sensibilities, irrespective of what's on the statute books. Since we'll be looking at a case which involves what might be called a natural crime in today's lecture, I've been asked by the university to give a health warning at this point, as some of the slides you'll see here you may find upsetting. Although if you're at all interested in a career in policing, which I assume you are, given the degree you're doing, then at some point you're going to have to get used to stuff like this, so it may as well be now. In any event, I shall let you know when a difficult image is about to come up, and you can either put your hands in front of your eyes or turn away. I'll leave that up to you. Right, let's get started. Wow. Okay, yeah, I kick off with a pretty gruesome one. Sorry. Forgot about that. The body hasn't been moved since resuscitation was attempted by the side of the aquarium tank, but then abandoned when it was clear the injuries sustained had been catastrophic. It's a woman in her 30s, I would guess, white European, with her right arm missing, and some of her torso too, where one of the sharks bit into her. You okay, Sigrid? Take a breath if you need to. The victim is wearing regular clothes, jeans, running shoes, and I can see a T-shirt in the water. Can we get that fished out, please? She's got a small pendant on a gold chain around her neck and little dolphin earrings. Okay, let's get her to the morgue and try and find out who the poor woman is. It was a strange activity, in a way, to go through my old case files and try to pick out something that might be useful to talk about to a group of criminology students. Something that might shed light on a contemporary aspect of policing, perhaps, or a new development in forensics, or, and this was most tempting, frankly, to show how I had on my own spotted a seemingly insignificant detail which ended up solving the whole case. And there were a few good ones to choose from. The journalist found dead in the Parliament building. The brothers found poisoned by a Vigeland sculpture. The son pushed from the rock face in Reinhemen National Park. But in the end, I picked one where I didn't cover myself in glory at all. I pretty much messed up, in fact. Because people learn much more from hearing about your failures than they do about your successes. Don't they? This is where we're at then, everyone. The security guard at the aquarium believes that the victim was a visitor who had hidden herself away in one of the stairwells after the place was closed for the night, and then managed to avoid the staff on the night shift and make her way to the main pool, where she entered the water for reasons unknown. Inside that pool are six bull sharks. Bull sharks are known for being very aggressive, which is why the feeding slot at the aquarium is so popular, because they go nuts over the lumps of tuna or whatever gets thrown in. Now, I'm told that bull sharks have one of the highest bite forces of any of the shark type species, which doesn't bear thinking about, really. The victim sustained injuries from more than one shark before the alarm was raised, and she was hauled out by the night duty staff, but by that time it was too late to save her. We've got Karen and her team going through the list of people who bought tickets for the day, and Anders is looking at CCTV, but I also want us to note the significance of the pendant around her neck, which inside has little pictures of what appear to be ancient water gods. So I think we can safely assume that this case will center around the Greek myths in some way. And if I hear anyone groaning at that, you'll be the person I'll pick to join me at the library.
Keto was a goddess of the sea, and also the goddess of creatures of the sea. Whales and sharks and so forth. In fact, the name itself may be derived from Ketos, meaning sea monster. As with most female deities, Keto is depicted as more human and beautiful than the men, and definitely more human and beautiful than her dreadful husband, Phorcys, who had a scaly tail, red shell-like skin, and basically crab forelegs. What Keto saw in him, I don't know. I can only assume he had a wonderful sense of humour. In the stories, the two are mostly remembered for the vast number of monstrous children they produced, and I mean actual monsters. Among others, they produced Ladon, who was a hundred-headed serpent, the Gorgons, who had snakes for hair and could turn you into stone if you looked at them the wrong way, and Scylla, who started off quite nice, but then got poisoned and turned into a sort of snake thing who grabbed sailors from their ships and ate them raw. And this was the victim's name, Scylla Hagen. Her coat and a small bag were found during a search of the public lockers at the aquarium, and her driving licence was inside a wallet. The bag also contained her phone, some lip balm, a spare memory card for a snazzy brand of camera which she had because of her work as a freelance nature photographer, a packet of tissues, some hand sanitizer, and a bottle of fairly strong antidepressants.
It's the police. If you're there, it's important that you come to the door so we can have a talk. It's about your daughter. Hi, excuse me, I'm looking for Mr. and Mrs. Hagen. Do you know if they're in? Or have you seen them recently? Okay, that'll be them. Sigrid! It's an old brown Volvo estate. So dirty, I can't even see the number plate. We're in pursuit and Sigrid is driving. Very swiftly, actually. And we might be able to block them at the end of Rissenholm Bay End if you can get to the south end. Whoa! Okay, while you're there, could you check if Sigrid has done the advanced driving test and what mark she got?
It turned out the police were often around at the Hagen household, having words with the mother and father, a couple that could have given the Greek gods a run for their money in terms of bad parenting. The neighbourhood was sick of them. Blazing rows on the streets, smash windows, late-night parties, and this is from two 60-year-olds. And that's before we get to their decision to name their daughter after a snake monster who eats sailors. They drove off at speed as a reaction to seeing the squad car. I mean, they were drunk too, so we had them on a driving offence. But they also showed limited grief when they were told that their daughter had died. The father even asked about whether she had life insurance. I couldn't stay in the room with them. My theory was that Scylla, with parents like that, felt that a transformation into a monster was inevitable and self-fulfilling, hence the antidepressants. On the day when she intuited the approaching darkness and felt unable to fend it off, she ended it all in an act of horrible symbolism.
OK, show me the storeroom. The corridor. The pool.
Right. So you're saying to me that there are 6 blind spots in the aquarium which the CCTV doesn't cover, and that Scylla was hiding in one of them. She passed through 4 of them on the way to the pool, and she actually entered the water in the 6th one. How would she possibly know all that unless she worked there? Oh, wait. Yep. I'm with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Settle down, please. Here comes the last slide I'm going to show you. It's a picture of a segmented lung. So look away now if you need to. I notice fewer of you avoiding the image. That's good. Important to look things square in the face if you can. Okay, so from the data on the lung tissue, the pathologist in this case was able to confirm that the victim was dead before she entered the water and that suffocation had happened up to an hour beforehand, which clearly made it a murder inquiry. That the victim had stayed hidden for so long threw suspicion onto the night staff of the aquarium, and eventually a warrant was issued to search the house of the security guard who'd originally sounded the alarm, and in whose garage the victim's camera was found. Under questioning, he revealed that Scylla often visited the aquarium and they'd struck up a friendly relationship, which he interpreted as something much more. When he talked her into the storeroom and made a clumsy advance, she rejected him in no uncertain terms, and in his words, his brain kind of popped and he smothered her. He threw her into the shark pool to cover it up. The subsequent background check revealed a pattern of controlling and sometimes violent behaviour with partners, many of whom, once they were told he was in custody, were able to open up about the abuse they'd suffered. He was convicted of the murder of Scylla Hagen and also 10 other offences, and is now serving a 25-year prison sentence. Something we might have missed had I continued down the road of the Greek myths. So the lesson, anyone? Yes, at the back.
I was hoping the lesson they'd take away was that in an investigation, even the boss's assumptions can be effectively challenged if you've built a confident team. And it's the best ideas in the room that solve a crime, no matter where they come from. They didn't take that lesson away. They took some other lesson away. I forget what it was exactly, but it was something about not solving crimes using the works of Homer. Well, let's see how far that gets them.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I believe I'm doing next term's lecture too. Oh, right. It hasn't been confirmed. Well then, I'll see you if I see you. Good luck, everyone.
Why do I do this to you?